it safely. Their LAV's instrumentation automatically telemetered that information back to Earth. But for the first time since Jamie had met Stacy, the Russian's broad, stolid face beamed with delight as she announced the news that was played on every television station on Earth. Touchdown! Humankind has returned to Mars! The mission controllers, 100 million kilometers away on the Pacific atoll of Tarawa, had broken into whoops and yowls of joy, hugging each other and dancing in their relief and excitement. Jamie blinked sweat from his eyes as the eight of them lined up before the vidcams that Trumbull and Rodriguez had set up on their Mars-thin tripods. He touched the keypad on his wrist that turned up the suit fans to maximum and heard their insects buzz whine to a higher pitch. Strange to feel hot and sweaty on a world where the temperature was almost always below freezing. Can't be from exertion, Jamie thought. It must be nervous excitement. He wished he could open his visor and wipe at his eyes, but he knew that his blood would boil out of his lungs at the pitifully low Martian atmospheric pressure. Later, Dex Trumbull would take the viewers from Earth on a virtual reality tour of their landing site, while everyone else worked at bringing out the tractors and unloading the spacecraft. For now, all eight of them would go through the arrival ceremony. As mission director, it fell to Jamie to make the first statement before the camera. It would take nearly a quarter of an hour for his words to cross the gulf between the two worlds. There were no conversations between Mars and Earth, only monologues traveling in opposite directions. 6 years earlier, when he had been the last member of the expedition to speak, he had said simply the old Navajo greeting, Ya'ate, it is good. Now, though, he was mission director, and more was expected of him. At least this second expedition was not as rigidly controlled as the first one had been. Instead of the almost military hierarchy imposed by the governments who sponsored the first Mars expedition, Jamie had worked out a more relaxed, more collegiate organization of equals. The two astronauts and six scientists lived and worked together as a harmonious team, most of the time. You ready? Trumbull's voice buzzed in Jamie's helmet earphones. Jamie nodded, then realized that no one could see the gesture. Ready as I'll ever be, he said as he stepped in front of the hand-sized vidcams. Trumbull, standing behind the spindly tripods, jabbed a finger at him. Jamie raised his hand and said, Greetings from the planet Mars. The second Mars expedition has landed as planned at the site of the habitat left by the first expedition. Turning slightly, Jamie waved an arm in the general direction of the dome. As you can see, the habitat is in excellent shape, and we're looking forward to spending the next year and a half here. Later, he continued, Dr. Trumbull will conduct a virtual reality tour of the area. Right now, I'd like to thank the International Consortium of Universities, the Space Transportation Association, and the taxpayers of the United States, Australia, Japan, the European Community, and the island nation of Kiribati for providing the funds that have made this expedition possible. They had drawn lots weeks earlier to decide the order of appearances. Vijay Shekhtar stepped up to the camera next, anonymous in her bulbous heart suit except for the bright green rings on its arms.
Hello to everyone on Earth, and especially to the people of Australia, she said in her decidedly Aussie accent.
Her voice belied her heritage. Shekhtar was of Hindu descent, dark skin and wide black onyx eyes, but she had been born and raised in Melbourne. She was a first-rate physician and psychologist who would also assist the biology team. After Shekhtar's little speech, Mitsuo Fuchida, one of the expedition's two biologists, gave his greetings, first in Japanese, then in English. Dex Trumbull, with his royal blue armbands, followed. And I want to thank the aerospace companies who donated so much of their equipment and personnel to us, he said after the ritual salutations and compliments, and the more than 45 universities around the world who have contributed to this expedition. Without your financial and material and personal support, we wouldn't be standing here on Mars now. Jamie felt his nose wrinkling slightly. I should have expected Dex to work a commercial in. He's more interested in making money out of this expedition than doing science. And a very special thanks to my father, Darrell C. Trumbull, whose energy, vision, and generosity has been a primal force in creating this expedition and an inspiration to us all. Jamie and Dex had argued about the expedition's goals for the whole 5 months of their flight to Mars, politely at first, like two mannerly academicians. But over the long months of their passage in space, their ideological differences inevitably sharpened into shouting matches. Real anger had developed between them. "I'm going to have to iron that out," Jamie told himself. "We can't go on snarling at each other. We've got to be able to work together as a team." "Find the balance," the Navajo part of his mind whispered. "Find the path that leads to harmony. Only harmony can bring you to beauty." His rational mind agreed, but still he seethed at Trumbull's cavalier assumption that the expedition should be aimed at making a profit. The last person to appear before the camera was Trudy Hall, the English cellular biologist. "I've been rehearsing this speech for months," she said, her voice high with excitement. "But now that we're here, well, all I can say is, crikey, this is a bit of all right. Let's get on with it." Jamie laughed to himself inside the privacy of his helmet. So much for English aplomb, he thought. The brief ceremonies over, Trumbull started to move the cameras while most of the others headed for the cargo hatch of their spacecraft and the labor of unloading. "Nobody sees us at work," Jamie thought. "The sweat of unloading our equipment and supplies isn't glamorous enough for the media and the folks back home. They want drama and excitement. Just hauling supplies from the LAV to the dome isn't thrilling enough for them." He turned and gazed out across the Martian landscape. "Once we thought it was dead, dry and cold and barren. But now we know better." He blinked and thought for a moment he was looking out at the Navajo land in New Mexico, where his grandfather had taken him so many times. Many summers ago, a lifetime ago, on another world. That land looked dry and dead, too. Yet the people lived there, thrived there, in a hard and bitter land. The Martian landscape held an uncanny beauty. It stirred a chord within Jamie, this red world. It was a soft landscape, barren and empty, yet somehow gentle and beckoning to him. Jamie saw that the shaded sides of the rocks and dunes were coated with a light powdering of white that sparkled and winked and vanished where the new-risen sun touched them. "I'm home," he thought. "After 6 years, I've come back to where I belong."
"What's that white stuff?"
Jamie heard Vijay Shekhtar's smoky feline voice in his earphones, softly curious. He turned his head, but the helmet blocked his view. He had to turn his whole body to see her standing beside him. "Frost," Jamie answered.
"Frost?"
"Water vapor in the atmosphere freezes out on the ground and the rocks."
"But this is spring, isn't it?"
Her voice sounded slightly puzzled, unsure. Nodding, Jamie answered. "That's right. It won't be summer for another 4 months."
"But frosts should come in autumn, not spring," she said.
Jamie smiled. "On Earth. This is Mars."
"Oh."
She seemed to consider that for a moment, then said with a gleeful lilt in her voice,
"We can have a snowball fight, then?"
Jamie shook his head. "Afraid not. The ice here won't compact. It's not wet enough. Not enough hydrogen bonding."
"I don't understand."
"It's like very dry, very powdery snow. Much drier and more powdery than anything on Earth." Jamie wondered if she had ever gone skiing in Australia. Maybe New Zealand, he thought. They have good ski mountains there.
"Can't make snowballs, then," Shekhtar said.
She sounded disappointed. Raising his arm to point toward the horizon, Jamie answered,
"You could once, long ago.
There was an ocean here, or at least a sizable sea, like the Gulf of Mexico, most likely, fairly shallow, warmed by the sun."
"Really?"
"Sure. See the terracing? The scallop-shaped indentations."
"That was caused by an ocean?"
Jamie nodded inside his helmet. "It lapped up to the slope of the Tharsis Bulge off to the west there. Where we're standing was probably seashore once. There might be fossils of seashells beneath our feet." "And what would Martian seashells look like?" Dex Trumbull asked sharply. "How would you recognize a fossil here? the forms would be completely different from Earth.